Yeah, so this workshop is basically for Supernova and GRB connections. I'll talk a bit about different connections between supernova remnants and galactic cosmic rays, which probably could have also some connections to GRBs. So as you know, the solution of the problem of origin of the cosmic rays was the major historical motivation for gamma ray astronomy. It started in 50s, late 40s, and still it remains the highest priority objective of TV gamma ray astronomy, especially in the context of several research areas all related to the shell-tube supernova remnants, first of all. But now we realize that there could be some interesting connections also to star formation regions, molecular clouds, pulsar wind nebulae, microquasar, GRB remnants, so it's much more complex than we could think before. And even now, gamma rays are detected from supernova remnants. We see there are other possibilities. We are very happy that finally they are detected, but still doesn't mean that the problem is solved. So I'll just try to go in this context. So origin of the cosmic rays is a mystery since the discovery of cosmic rays in 1912 by Victor Hess. And it seems now we are quite close to the solution of this problem. And first of all, thanks to the Hess. I'll talk a bit about Hess. This is a new instrument in TV gamma ray astronomy because Hess provides now the first important probes of size of the production of the cosmic rays. But basically, I think we are just close, but this problem probably could be solved with next generation of rays. Let's call it beyond Hess, Veritas, whatever, magic. And also very important results could come, key results, in fact, from neutrino telescopes, but still is necessary to understand would be the current design sufficient to detect neutrinos for supernova remnants. But that is another important step. And I'll talk about a bit unusual thing, and I think this could be also extremely important, maybe even easier to get to enter the problem of hadronic cosmic rays. Typically, when you could see in all proposals for hard X-ray instruments that you are going to explore non-thermal universe in the sense of detection of synchrotron radiation of primary accelerated electrons, I'll just talk a bit that probably this will be extremely important instruments to probe the hadronic component of cosmic rays, as good as, maybe even better than gamma ray neutrino instruments. Now, just a few words about the Hess. Hess is the leading instrument in ground-based gamma ray astronomy at this moment. It consists of four giant telescopes, 12 meter diameter, four telescopes located in Namibia. They work in the so-called stereoscopic mode. And the telescope is here. There are, it consists of about 200, more than 100 the mirrors, the glass mirrors. And the area is about 100 square meter. And this is a camera consisting of 920 pixels. And important, very important aspect of the Hess is 5-degree field of view. And this is very important, in particular for galactic extended galactic sources. And just so, let me spend some time because very often people are surprised how could such nice results suddenly arrive. And the reason is quite simple. It was also clear that these ground-based instruments are very, very sensitive instruments for detection of gamma rays. Basically, it was considered in the past, a few years ago even, that as a kind of compromise instrument, because if you want to detect gamma rays, since fluxes are very low, you cannot use the satellites, so you have to do something. Then you do this so-called ground-based approach, but now I think even space people are convinced that probably this instrument provides the best performance in gamma ray astronomy at any wavelength. And so sensitivity, which achieved by HASTE, is at this level, which is about 10 minus 13 for point sources. And you could probe the gamma rays with such instrument up to luminosity 10 to 33 arc per second within galaxy up to density 16 kiloparsec, and in the extragalactic objects up to 10 to 41 arc per second. But in fact, these are just isotropic luminosity. In fact, if you have beamed sources like blazars, then it could be much less. And sensitivity is at least two orders of magnitude better than E-grade, actually three orders of magnitude. And another interesting aspect is you could say, okay, this is a nice sensitivity, but still is much below that the best astronomical instrument like Chandra or Hubble. In fact, you get these beautiful sensitivities for Chandra and Hubble due to the arc-second, the sub-arc-second resolution. If you go to extended sources, you lose a lot of these advantages. And in fact, in the language of the energy flux, HASTE could be even more sensitive, even more sensitive instrument to probe the high energy electrons, for example, than Chandra or Hubble. So that is, now we really see this problem. We're missing more sensitive instrument than Chandra in order to do multi-wavelength studies. Okay, another interesting aspect of these instruments are huge detection areas. They have very nice angular resolution. Three arc minutes, HASTE now already has, it could be even better. And the energy resolution is quite reasonable. Dynamical range for HASTE is 100 GV to, let's say, 30 TV, actually a bit more. But what is important here is the huge detection areas which provide the very large photon statistics. If you don't have good photon statistics, then, I mean, it doesn't matter. You have very nice angular resolution or energy resolution, you could not exploit that. So you need really high photon statistics, and these instruments provide high photon statistics. Just for that reason, these imaging Cherenkov telescope arrays are very effective multifunctional tools. They can provide spectrometry, I mean, because of these high photon statistics. The temporal studies in the short time scales, like for blazars, morphology, they can do also surveys. The targets of these instruments are extended sources from supernova remnants to clusters of galaxies. They are very nicely matched also from transient phenomena like microquasars, blazars, GRBs. Still, we don't have GRBs, unfortunately. So they are doing galactic astronomy, extragalactic astronomy, observational cosmology. So it's very nice. And if you look at the HASTE papers recently, you could see the papers from all these areas. So the reason is just really is multifunctional instrument, as I want to say. Unfortunately for cosmic ray studies, because you spend the time you share between different these topics, so not the whole time goes to the cosmic ray studies. Now, the sky today after HASTE is still, we don't have many sources. It's approaching, I think, about 240, but a lot of sources you can see are located in the galactic plane, and there are many others still unidentified. And the interesting aspect for this instrument is numbers, probably just as I said, 40 maybe not very impressive, but at least we have source for populations, which are pulsars, pulsar nebulae, which didn't detect until now the pulsars, supernova remnants, blazars, unidentified galactic sources we don't know. I mean, could be many could be belongs to these objects. Compact galactic objects like binary pulsar 1259 and one microquasar was recently detected by HASTE, and galactic sandwich, which is a very special issue. Okay, now cosmic ray studies with cosmic rays. You could say why we need cosmic. The gamma rays, the reason is very simple, all we know, because cosmically we could not get the position of the sources studying cosmic rays due to deflection of the charged particles. Cosmic rays tells us a lot about cosmic rays. For example, we are sure from the studies of the measurements, the spectral measurements and the mass composition, that the primary spectra inside the source should be close to E minus 2. We know even production rate, but we still do not know the acceleration size, source populations, acceleration mechanisms. We know more or less, but still there are a lot of mysteries in this context. So one idea, if you want to really study galactic cosmic rays, you have to go up to at least 1 PV energies, because there's little doubt that up to 10 to 15 cosmic rays are coming from galactic sources. And interestingly, since you have the very smooth spectra, of course there could be many accelerators which contribute to cosmic rays. As you know, even solar flares, during solar flares you could get even cosmic rays up to 10 GeV. But the problem here, we have quite smooth spectrum, power law spectrum up to 10 to 15. It implies that one source population perhaps dominates. And since it goes to PV, I would say that this source population which dominates should be pevatron. So pevatron is just, in high energy physics language, is one PV is 10 to 15 eV. So most likely, these pevatrons also contribute to low energies. So it's very interesting to get them. Okay. Now about the supernova remnants, we are considered the most probable factories for galactic cosmic rays. This is almost a common belief, which is based in two arguments. The necessary amount of available energy is 10 to 50 erg in kinetic energy. So if you get 10% efficiency, could transfer to the cosmic rays, then it's sufficient to explain galactic cosmic rays. And this is a very old argument. It comes from Budde and Zwicky even. So it's very interesting how we could estimate that time 70 years ago, so accurately. This number. And another interesting step towards solution of the supernova cosmic rays is the theoretical, is diffuse, so-called diffusive shock acceleration, which provides spectra, E minus 2 type spectra in the sources. And okay, there is some misleading. I mean, this mechanism doesn't tell us how much you could accelerate. This 10% is still just model number, and it comes from the model. It's not just that theory doesn't give you this 10%. Nevertheless, it's just a very reasonable number. So, as I said, commonly believe that supernova remnants provide the cosmic rays. But you would like, of course, to have not the theoretical arguments. You'd like to see experimental evidence. And the straightforward proof is detection of course, gamma rays and neutrinos from proton-proton interactions. And if you want to do this appropriately, this job, you have to a sensitivity which could probe the total energy nucleonic component of the cosmic rays. You should go to probe the level down to 10 to 49, 10 to 50 erg, otherwise it's not meaningless. So this implies in this, the sense of the sensitivity of detectors should go to down 10 minus 13 or square something per second, and this should be done in the energy domain few hundred GeV to 100 TeV. So this is which now Hess has. So that is the reason what Hess detected cosmic rays. Now, the visibility of the supernova remnant in high energy gamma rays is extremely simple arithmetics, like just to multiply to the density of, you assume the cosmic ray spectrum, multiply to the density, you know the cross-section. And it depends on this parameter. You see this parameter, normalization parameter. So you put the reasonable numbers, 10 to 50 arc, for interstellar medium density 1 per cubic centimeter, the distance 1 kiloparsec. You will see the you should expect the flux at the level of the crop. And typically what you do within the framework for this diffusive shock acceleration theory, you should go to approximately 1,000-year-old supernova remnants when this is in the so-called pseudo phase. And there are some problems here because you also have the electrons, and the electrons, there's a pollution due to the inverse Compton. About electrons, you are sure there are electrons because of the synchrotron radiation. But this is not a big issue. If the pollution could be significant if magnetic field is in the let's say in downstream actually, but everywhere, should be less than 10 microgauss. If the magnetic field is less than 10 microgauss, then you are free of this problem, because all energy, I mean, you could estimate the electron population from the total energy from the synchrotron radiation, and the PS is quite low in inverse Compton, so this is a good news. In other words, if this parameter is more than 0.1, so you see if more than 0.1, there's 0.1 club, this is easily can be detected by Hess type instrument, and if the X-ray flux at 1 kV is less than 10 microjansky, which is typical for strongest ones, and the magnetic field is less than, more than 10 microgauss, then you are safe. The pi zero will dominate. Now, which sources you should observe? First of all, these are, of course, sources which show the synchrotron radiation, and there are some examples. This is the was the considered best example, and was just claims by Kangaroo Group, Australian group. They detected gamma rays from this source. Unfortunately, Hess didn't confirm that. This was a kind of shock. I mean, more emotional shock, but in fact, there's no problem at all. I mean, if you assume magnetic field more than 25 microgauss or density less than 1 per cubic centimeter, then, I mean, 0.1 per cubic centimeter, which is the case, so no problem at all. It was just, I mean, theorists trusted too much to these observations and pushed their numbers to get the fluxes. Now, if you don't have fluxes, no problem. I mean, this is, but now, the HIGRA, it was another instrument before Hess, detected gamma rays from Cassiopeia A, and that is quite safe result. Unfortunately, there are no, at this moment, sufficiently good instruments like Hess in the Northern Hemisphere. Otherwise, this will be extremely exciting and nice results. And as you need very sensitive instrument to detect gamma rays, measure the spectrum. HIGRA couldn't measure the spectrum, it was not sufficiently sensitive, but this is another very hot topic which should be done hopefully soon. Now, I'm talking now about this nice supernova remnant which was detected by Rosat, discovered by Rosat. It's young, about 1,000-year-old supernova remnants, 1,600, and this is the first high-quality imaging gamma ray astronomy. This is the image of detected by Hess. And Hess also detected the energy spectrum. You could see nice energy spectrum with very small error bars from a few hundred GeV up to 40 TeV. And this Hess was even able, because these large photon statistics not only measure the morphology and the measure the spectrum, also could couple morphology with spectrometry. So Hess could measure the spectra from different parts of this supernova remnant, and here you see the photon index against the flux against the photon index. You could see not so much correlation with the flux, and in fact not much dispersion. I mean, this is more or less photon index from all parties around two. This could be considered as an argument in favor of pi zeros, because for inverse Compton, actually mechanism for electrons, you expect change of electron spectra when they move from the accelerators to other sites. And so there's another interesting aspect. There's a TV correlations, morphological correlations. I mean, there are the very strong correlation between ASCA image, which has a similar angular resolution for pre-arc minutes, and Hess image. Now, what are implications? Of course, if you have, you could prove that these are hadronic component, then you could estimate WP, total energy in the protons, and that was all we dreamed to get this number. And if inverse Compton, not so bad at all. I mean, it's just formally speaking, you could measure the electrons without any assumption, model assumption, because inverse Compton comes is a result of your scattering on 2.7K. This is a unique situation in astrophysics when you know everything about the target. So if you measure, if you are convinced these are electrons, inverse Compton, then you simply measure the image of electrons, and I mean how they occupy, and you measure the energy spectrum total energy in electrons. Okay, so situation could be, I should go the fast, could be much more complicated. We are convinced these are hadronic, but there is still room for electronic models. So this is extremely important result. So we don't like to rush and to claim such exciting thing that we detected the hadronic component of the cosmic rays. Even I think most of us now are convinced that we do see hadronic. Now it's come another. So this is all three our observations in 2004. Now we have just 4 hour observations. Now we have much more observation time. We are going to submit some paper. And this is an even nicer result from Villa Jr., this very young supernova remnant, 300 year old. So the new result, as I said, this is photosynthesis is quite limited, shows extremely nice ring, perfect ring, closed. And the width is less than 10%, in fact 5% of the radius. This is 2 degree radius source, and this is coming soon. What is interesting, I mean, if you want to fit the data for Villa Jr. Within the inverse Compton model, then you should require even smaller magnetic field, something like 4 microgauss, which is really bad. I mean, this is, I mean, if even you take without any amplification of the thing, I finish and then done because I have some 3 minutes. Okay, so inverse Compton model for the synchrotron radiation for RXG 1713, as I said, requires very small magnetic field. It should be between 7 and 11 microgauss and doesn't fit data. So I don't like to go now to that we could find, as I said, way to explain within inverse Compton, but I don't like to do that. Now, if it'll be question, I could show. Well, another interesting thing, what I want to show, there's a beautiful agreement between the fit by proton-proton interactions. And the interesting, well, there is no much time I can tell you. We did recently a deep studies for this process, which are just, you should use experimental data, and we could see some interesting features in the cross section which has not revealed before, which really nicely fit the data. So, but still you could see not what I'm saying nicely, there are the spectral index and the cutoff energy. You see 3 different options fit equally nice, so there is still uncertainties which one. So at this moment, we think the best one, of course, is the 1.7 for spectral index of protons, which confirms to some extent the nonlinear shock acceleration scenario. But we have large systematic errors at lowest energy, so we are a bit scared to claim that this is really, we see such a flat spectrum here. And another important thing is high energy part. Now, about 3 channels of information about the cosmic ray pivotrons. Yes, what we see in this Villa Jr. for this supernova remnant, cutoff energy is around 100 TeV. So you could say, it's nice that you detected, but this is not a pivotron. Well, this is a question, is interesting, really, question. In first, this could be pivotron because the highest energy particle could already left the shell, so you don't simply see them because it's difficult to confine high energy particles. So in that sense, still we need more data, and not just from the source, but surrounding the source to understand do we have pivotrons or not, because the highest energy protons when go away from the source, from the accelerator, and if you are lucky and there are clouds nearby, they could the clouds, and then you could see very high energy PV, not PV, 100 TV gamma rays. And interesting now, question is, again, you have the problem, this is inverse Compton or not. Even if you detect 100 TV gamma rays, it's almost impossible to have inverse Compton gamma rays. This is suppress this channel. And neutrinos will be interesting to detect, and will be interesting to detect hard X-rays from the secondary pi plus pi minus mesons. And this is just show expected fluxes, and usually the level of secondary electron, synchrotron radiation of secondary electrons, factor of 3, 4, 5, 10 is less depending on the flux than in gamma rays. At this moment, we don't have sensitive X-ray instruments, hard X-ray, but they are coming soon, or soon, hopefully. And this could be used to probe these tevatrons. Now, just last two minutes, I just want to show you, as I said, you should not only expect gamma rays from the accelerators, but also around accelerators, because highest energy cosmic rays live easier. They go away, and then if they hit material, you could see these highest energy gamma rays from nearby. And that was what we just yesterday appeared paper of his, new paper of his, in Nature, when we detected four clouds in the galactic within 1 degree, within 100 parsec of galactic, central part of the galaxy. These are these four clouds, which nicely correlate with molecular clouds there, the gamma rays, except for one. And that we think we understand why, because this one is located too far. So it means if you have the deal with cosmic rays which are produced some 10 to 4, 10 to 5 years ago, for example, by Sagittarius A star, they didn't have time to achieve to this. So we see some episodic echo of episodic event which happened in the central part of the galaxy. It could be Sagittarius A star black hole or Sagittarius A supernova remnant. So this is another issue. Just I want to say, really, we started to see also molecular clouds as a result of the gamma rays hitting the molecular clouds, and this is the first results come from galactic center. And I want to finish just with a summary. There's a lot of material to talk also, not only the shell top supernova remnants, but the hunt just started. This is the haze, but what we see now, we need a more sensitive specialized instruments, especially in above 10 TeV. And it's good to have also, this could be done soon actually, and we need the neutrinos. This is TVPV neutrinos, and I said the hard X-rays, and all three these channels together. The goal, ultimate goal, will be just to get certain answers about the origin. It's nice to have it 2012, before the 100-year anniversary discovery of cosmic rays.
Time for questions.
Yes,
Don.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the question of the dependence of the
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. Okay, that's nice to see how you manage to do that, but no. The question is just I say if you see gamma rays and that's from the same region, you see X-rays, then I don't care how they are accelerating, how they enter this region. The only 2.7K is the target for inverse compensation.
But you have to care how they're accelerated because the magnetic field impacts the accelerator in a nonlinear fashion.
No. Let's go to the, they are different things. At the stage when our particles are there, when I see X-rays and gamma rays, how they enter there is another question. Of course, if they are separated, X-ray and gamma ray emission regions, this is another question. But if I know upper limit on X-rays, from the region when gamma rays are, this is doesn't matter how they are. This is another story. How they are accelerated, how they enter there. I don't see. Okay, I'm excited to see how you manage to produce that. But I think it's misunderstanding between.
Maybe we'll continue these other questions. Yes.
I have another comment. I think that indeed magnetic field may influence the acceleration in nonlinear way, but it's not quite clear in which. Way exactly, and I think the kind of estimates are pretty robust, and we don't have to worry much about the influence of don't generate a magnetic field on this mission.
Again, let me be very clear. What you see, forget about theory of observation. You see emission. You have two channels, pi zero, inverse Compton. And then there are population of electrons, there are population of cosmic rays. As I said, how they appear there, accelerator is there, or accelerator outside, you just analyze, forget about theories, you analyze emission mechanism coming from the production region of gamma rays. And then you see, in that region, magnetic field should be less. Now, if you say magnetic field in accelerator could be high, what? Underlying a particle spectrum you get from data.
Okay, so maybe we'll what? Continue during your talk.
You have one uncertainty. There's an inverse Compton cross section, which you know, hopefully. And then you just, if you assume inverse Compton, you know inverse Compton cross section, and then you get immediately spectrum for electrons. You don't need here theory. Theory you need to understand afterwards when you get electrons, and then you should ask yourself how these electrons could be accelerated. But at that stage, you don't need theory for acceleration.
Let me move on to another question.
Usually, equipartition works very well in diffuse regions. If you apply equipartition to the ejecta, I mean, if you sit on the ejecta and see the interstellar medium coming towards you, and if you take the environment of supernova remnants, of supernova, you get a magnetic field of something of the order of 10 micrograus. I wonder, 100 micrograus means an energy density which is 100 times larger. I wonder...
For what source you are speaking about?
I'm very skeptical about a magnetic field. How you would sustain a magnetic field of 100 micrograus in a region, if you collide with a region whose density is of the order of 10 to the minus 2 particles per cubic centimeter?
I don't understand your point, but let's see.
I'm saying. No, he had the, in order to fit the spectrum of a supernova, you needed 100 micrograus, didn't you?
For which? No, I think, let me say.
You had a case with 100 micrograus, fitted micrograus magnetic field.
For which, what you fit?
I don't remember which supernova.
But then better you remember, because otherwise I could not answer to your question. So, I mean, if you have 10 micrograus field, you could fit.
No, 10 micrograus, it's all right, but I saw on one of your transparency 100 micrograus.
100 micrograus, you kill all inverse Compton. This is what I want to say, and that you can convince yourself.
Just a quick question. The scaling of this TeV flux goes as density over d squared. Have you rank ordered the supernova remnants in our galaxy to see which ones have it and how they scale with density over distance squared?
Well, we have actually detected only two shell types of supernova remnants, and RFG 1713. There are some others among the unidentified sources. And but we are not sure they are supernova remnants or something else. One could be actually in galactic center Sagittarius A East, but the flux goes like this, d minus 2, but also is proportional to the density of the environment. So if there are molecular clouds, for example, if you hit molecular clouds, then you have uncertainty. If not molecular cloud, you should take 1 for density. If molecular cloud, up to 100 or more. So there's a big uncertainty. So we need to understand the correlation, CO correlations with high energy gamma rays, to measure the density, and after that to scale to the distance. But for high sensitivity, only hope to get 10 kiloparsec supernova remnants, we need high density environment, about 100. So molecular cloud should be nearby in order to get. Otherwise, we don't have chance to get them. Villa Junior is just 300 parsecs for that reason.
We have another question.
I think one of the problems with the pine decay model for RxJ7013 and Vela Junior is that you don't see any thermal x-rays. So probably that means that the density is very low. So you don't have your targets for your pions. So I think in those two cases, inverse Compton is much more likely.
No, no, as I said, I think just as I said, we don't claim ourselves that is the problem. But the only claim is here that if in the region of production of gamma rays, magnetic field should be less than 10 microgauss. This is the first claim. Second is, in order to get for protons to produce the flux which we see, you need density about 1 per cubic centimeter. If you put there in cosmic rays, 10 to 50 arc. So,
sure, but how do you get the NS1 in Vela Junior and RxJ7013 if you don't see any thermal X-ray emission?
RxJ7013, there could be cloud, huge cloud actually.
We had the same problem with Tycho, and I think the issue about the thermal emission is problematic because you just drain all the energy into the cosmic rays and there's very little energy left for the thermal, and that could in fact go to a very low temperature where you're absorbed by the interstellar medium. So the density estimates from the lack of thermal emission in these remnants and the Chandra band are very uncertain because it depends on making an assumption about the temperature, and that temperature could be below the band, in which case you could have very high densities. So I think it's important to look at that carefully.
No, again, I mean, from our data, we say what density we need to explain by pi zeros. For these both sources, density should be around 1, not much less. If much less, then yes, then photons do not provide that, or you should run to require much higher energy in cosmic rays, which not likely. So for inverse Compton problem, there are two problems: to feed data, but maybe you could find a way. Secondly, in that region where you see gamma rays should be less than 10 microgauss.
Yeah, there's a class of remnants that are thought to be interacting with dense clouds like W44 and W28 and IC443. Have you looked at those with HESS, or are there any results on it?
Well, okay, IC443, I could say we have at this moment only upper limit. We had some indication, but after long observation disappeared, it seems. At the same time, IC443 could be also played on there, so it's a bit uncertain. W28, yes, we see signal. It's in published, but it's coming soon. We do see. It's not so strong, but we do see. And there's major sources actually also, so it's not clear. It's the strongest major source in the environment. So we see gamma rays basically from measures, the major regions.
Yeah, one last question. Is it possible to reach the Crab Nebula with HESS or not?
No, we use Crab for calibration. We detect
but
Crab.
Do you get also a two-dimensional picture of the emission of the Crab?
No, I mean, because, okay, the Crab, we observe with legal angles. I mean, it's about 60 degrees, so it's not the best angles we should observe. So we get marginally, I mean, which you still could observe this object at 60 degrees in its angle. But it's point-like source for us. And if a Crab would be in southern hemisphere, we now achieve two arc-minute angular resolution. So the Crab is six, but in fact, the gamma rays most likely are coming from the central part, again, two arc-minute.
The nice thing is we know the magnetic field in there from the optical synchrotron,
exactly,
and all the things, so then you would be in business to solve these problems.
But I can, if you want, we detected Vela.
Thanks very much.
The next speaker is Chuck